This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
On the shores of Bedford Basin, in Halifax, Nova Scotia, there once stood a place called Africville. Its story, unlike any other, is about the injustice faced by one of Canada's founding black communities. Irvin Carvery was born and raised in Africville, living there until he was 13 years old. Carvery remembers how residents felt due to the city's constant mistreatment of their rights.
People of Africville paid the same taxes and yet received none of the services. Absolutely none. Everything that the people of Africville got into their community had to be petitioned for, and time after time going after it. Electricity didn't come to Africville till late. The whole length of our community, we only had three street lamps. The railroad went right through the middle of our community. To cross from one side to another, you had to go up an incline across the railroad tracks. There were no safety lights, no warning signals if a train was coming, so you crossed at your own peril.
Then Carvery mentions the determination of families who lived their lives without neither running water nor health services.
The only thing the people of Africville ever received were services unwanted in other parts of the city, starting with the railroad. And then there was an infectious disease hospital built directly above our community. There were abattoirs, fertilizer plants, bone-crushing mill. And finally, the biggest insult and the last insult that was inflicted upon the people of Africville was the placement of the open dump 300 meters from the nearest home in Africville.
Africville was culturally distinct from other parts of this city, province, and country, and its relative independence and self-sufficient ways brought everyone closer together.
It became unique because of the fact that it was isolated. It was a community that was left on its own. It was marginalized because of the racial discrimination here in the city. Because we were black, we were seen as being still slaves. Slaves were held here in Halifax, bought and sold. Black people here in this place were seen to be less than. But that provided us with an opportunity to grow as a community, to develop our own kind of culture, our own kind of traditions.
Over the years, the issue of Africville's demise was brought up many times at Halifax City Hall. According to Carvery, their reasoning was due to health risks associated with industry in the area.
Relocation of Africville really began at the turn of the century with the economic expansion of Halifax with the First World War, subsequently the Second World War. There was an industrial growth in the city of Halifax. The population more than doubled. And the area of Africville was looked upon by city officials as being what was called the industrial mile. Any new industries looking to locate here in the city were being encouraged to locate in that area. And of course, with that kind of planning in mind, the officials said, well, we've got to get Africville out of there.
In the late 1960s, families were removed from their property and relocated into the city, while the entire area was torn down.
What ended up happening when final decision was made to destroy our community, really the people of Africville were thinking that, oh well, they've said this numerous times before, nothing's ever happened. So they didn't really prepare themselves, in fact, for what in fact actually happened. That's what went on there, and the whole relocation process itself was one of intimidation, one of coercion, one of downright dirty tricks.
Henry Bishop, the director of Nova Scotia's Black Cultural Center, believes Africville stands as a reminder to all of what can happen when ignorance leads to intolerance.
It's a major concern for people who have little power or little influence over decisions that are made about them. And Africville was a pivotal point for a particular culture, in this case the African Nova Scotians, that had suffered oppression and racism for hundreds of years, and yet it continued up into the 20th century, which needed to be addressed.
Bishop says this tragedy must be discussed and debated for many years to come, so people can be fully aware of its implications.
I think it was a devastating blow to the cohesiveness of a community when something that happens in the geographical area where they belong. It took a lot of the strength of the community away from how people bonded and again with the spirituality of the community, yet people still have felt connected, kinship and family connections. But again, it's not like you can go back to your home and see where you were born and the house that you lived in and see where you played and the tree that you climbed. These are things that we take for granted until they're gone.
Like the families who once called Africville home, the thought of what occurred on this land in northern Halifax still affects Bishop emotionally.
It was devastating to think about it in terms of my own hometown and what if it happened to me. And I think that's the real view that one must take. It's thinking of that as being part of how the Africville people are still suffering and they're still wounded from the battered and shattered spirit that they had to have in their life. It's a time to rebuild that spirit. It's a time to rekindle that spirit.
Three young women from the community went on to form the Africville Genealogy Society. Their mission is to educate future generations about the history and traditions of Africville.
I became involved in the society around 1985. This was after my children were born. Up to that point in time, it was just an organization to do social functions. My involvement in it, I said, no, there needs to be more than this. We need to have recognition of what happened to our community, the injustices, the historical injustices that happened to our people, and there needs to be compensation for it. And not just with relocation, but our historical injustice to our community. So we began to become political. In order for us to become political, it was quickly identified that really the story of Africville wasn't fresh in the minds of people. A lot of people didn't even know about Africville.
During its existence, Carvery says many people depicted Africville as a slum or ghetto. But the reality was most people living there were themselves property owners and upstanding citizens.
Well, at the time of relocation, there were 80 families living in Africville, and the total population was roughly around 400 people. That would have been one of the higher numbers in terms of residents, because it started as a very small community. It wasn't really, really big. There were five founding families that went into Africville. There were the Brown family. There was Carvery's, Fletcher's, Hill's, and Arnold's were the original land purchasers.
And Bishop believes that if it were still around today, the area would be a destination for black culture in eastern Canada.
I always likened Africville to a view of Peggy's Cove and how the tourist attraction is today over that particular area in St. Margaret's Bay. You would think of it being a very quaint little village on the Bedford Basin. Tourists would come to see a rural kind of setting in an urban community of Halifax. It would be quite dynamic and unique, the arts and crafts and farming and veggies and markets and things going on. That, to me, is being the great view of how history can be kept alive. This is something that Africville could have evolved to, and people would still have descendants lurking there and living there and benefiting from the use of that space, which was inherited from their ancestors.
The only thing remaining in what is now known as Seaview Park is a memorial commemorating those who founded Africville. To Bishop, this is not enough.
I think it's a basic understanding of what history can stand for in contemporary times. Africville is not an old story. It's a relatively recent history. Many people aren't aware of the issues that happened at that particular point in the early stages of the demise of Africville, and it's still being discussed even as we speak in the 21st century.
All over Canada, religion has played a role in shaping society. In Africville, their church served as a place of worship and as a center of activity.
The church was a focal point for spirituality. It gave them something that they could rest their hearts and souls in. It was a benchmark for them to feel empowered, and they could also be healed of some of the issues and miseries that they had to suffer as a result of some of the treatments that they had to endure. So I believe that the church was that foundation that they definitely would have utilized right till today.
Not only is Carvery working to keep Africville on people's minds, but he also wants to give those who don't know a chance to understand their story.
We filed a lawsuit against the city of Halifax. That still sits before the court, but we are continuing to negotiate a settlement with the city of Halifax, which we're hoping to conclude very, very soon, to see the rebuilding of the church, Seaview African United Baptist, and the building of an interpretive center in Africville to tell the story not just in what's important is to tell the story not just of Africville, but to show the correlation between the community of Africville and the history of the city of Halifax. That's where we are right now, and we're hopefully going to have that interpretive center and the church rebuilt so that my great-great-grandchildren will always have a place to go to learn about their history, learn about their culture.
At the Bedford Basin in Halifax, Nova Scotia, I'm Adam Bema.